I used to hate the water.
I can't imagine why.
Hi, I'm Simon, and welcome to Extra Features Interviews. Today we're with John Savat. Okay. And the movie's called Road to the Well?
Yep.
I guess we'll start off with some interesting questions. Did you fund this yourself, or was it... How did you fund it? Let's ask that question.
So basically I was working at this company, Maker Studios, and it was owned by and operated by these three pretty young entrepreneurs. They're all aspiring actors and filmmakers and whatnot, and they started this digital media company. So it was pretty successful. It started out with just 30 of us when we initially began there, and then it became a billion-dollar company that sold to Disney and has about 500-plus people. They just went through a round of layoffs, so the magic might have faded a bit. But basically, I took inspiration from their business model, just like these three really smart and passionate individuals that were, interested in doing whatever it took to make a successful company. So basically, it was kind of just looking up business plans online and writing them up and giving it to friends and family. And that got us a little bit of progress when we were trying to hit our financing goal. And then we launched a Kickstarter campaign where I was able to take all the social media expertise that I assembled over the years, and we raised about $41,000 from there. And then I think probably the last 25% of that was me just scrounging for gigs and living like a college person for the last 4 or 5 years and just putting everything I could earn back into the project.
That's awesome.
I think that,
I thought the project had a really good look.
Yeah, thank you.
I thought the lighting was really well done, and I liked your cinematographer at the beginning. I thought he had a very good sense of depth along. I don't know if that was you.
It was Tim Davis and I, we're best friends. We went back to, I think, junior highs when we initially met each other, and then we became really close in high school, and he moved out to L.A., and was the one that actually got me the job at Maker Studios, and he kind of just pioneered going out west, and so we always had a mission to make a film, and so we lived with each other during the time, and what we basically did was buy a package of Army figures and went to this bar down called the Cinema Bar, and basically just went through the scene, the script, scene by scene, and we used the Canon to be the camera, and we basically just, with a mixture of toy cars and the soldiers,
that's awesome.
Just blocked the scene, every single shot, and then in addition to that, we went to each location, did a photo board, I did my own overheads, he did his own overheads, because basically, he knew that this should have a very professional and cinematic quality to it, and he was absolutely right, and so it was really about making sure that the battle plan that we had was as prepared as possible, because things go inevitably wrong. And so it was really just about like, all right, we need these 10 shots in order to just have this make sense. If we get 3 more of these shots, then they'll make it even better. And then if there's these 2 more for bonus, all the better. And so that's what we basically tried to do, is just, plan it down to the tiniest detail.
Well, that's awesome.
In order to just, be able to execute and get that professional look.
I find it paid off. I do find a lot of indies didn't have a lot of movement, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, yeah.
And definitely. I did see in all your shots, I found a couple of them needed a little bit more movement, but I found a lot, you had movement going on a lot, which I liked.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because when you get done with it, if there wasn't movement that was very much more a product of limitation, either through just either the location or the budget, or just time, and so I think that's the appreciation you kind of get at the end is that, when you're watching a film, you're really watching what, is a victim of all those elements, rather than what might have been the filmmaker's vision. And so, there are definitely a few scenes that I wish we could have done a little bit more, and I'd
which
even
ones?
Say that.
And I guess I'm going to ask one more specific. Which one
specifically? I mean, I think that the bar scene, for instance, in the original script, that scene, the lesson I learned is don't give too much exposition in one scene, because we cut that down pretty significantly. I think it's probably twice as long.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, it's that was a baby I was fine with killing pretty early on. But basically, it was, I think the original conception for that was that there's going to be a band playing and there's going to be all these people in there and all that type of
stuff.
Yeah,
I could have seen that. I could have seen that happen.
Yeah, and it's the limitations you're unfortunately going to run into is just you know, all of that stuff costs money, and then the more components you have within a scene is the more you have to control, and it's the more that's going to kind of prohibit you from really digging in deep with your actors and your crew and everything. So, so I mean, that was kind of, you know, just a victim of the limitations I was describing. You know, I wish I could have done more with it. There were definitely plans to do more with it, but, you know, at the end of the day, it's you know, like, I just as a little anecdote and a little bit of trivia is that the dartboard was on the other side of the wall for anyone that watched the film before they're listening to this. It was on the other side of the wall, and we had to take the dartboard down and put the other side to make it kind of the blocking just a little bit better, right? Well, that took about an hour and a half. And you want to, you know, you're on a set, you're like, well, what's an hour and a half? It's like, I will let you know that that pretty much limited us from getting even everything we needed. We kind of had to make, you know, a lot of kind of gross changes to the overall structure of that scene. And it just goes to show, I mean, the unforeseen obstacles that you end up dealing with will often kind of have an impact on how a scene plays out or you know, anything of that nature.
How was your casting done? How did you look at casting for this film? Did you know everybody?
So I was at I was in an acting class. I took an acting class in Los Angeles as preparation. I just kind of wanted to be in the mind of you know, how an actor is going to respond to a director. And so I took an acting class at the Actors Circle in Culver City with Marcy Smolin, and I didn't tell her that I was out to make a feature film or why I was in there necessarily, but once we launched the Kickstarter, the cat was out of the bag. And she's like, well, let me read the script, and you know, and in that pure kind of 6 degrees way, she basically passed it on to our casting directors, Billy DeMota and Dee Vice, who are in the CSA, and have just done you know, tons and tons of casting. I think they discovered Billy Bob Thornton was one of their earliest accomplishments, and it was basically them just coming to say, look, we're willing to work with you. We really like the script, and because I mean, I think anyone that's about to set out to make a film without any type of studio or legitimate backing, the fear that you always have is like, am I going to have to resort to Craigslist? Am I going to have to resort to LA Casting? It's not that those avenues are so poor or anyway, but when you go with a casting director, you know that you're going to get a minimum quality. So what you end up being able to achieve is really getting people that are able to shine and really provide that extra punch and quality that you might not have even imagined when you initially put the screenplay together.
I apologize for this. I should have had better notes. I really liked his friend.
Yeah. Are you talking about the guy with the beard?
Guy with the beard was my favorite. I thought your lead could have been kicked in the ass a little bit harder by you.
Yeah.
To emote a little bit more at times.
Right. He was awesome. I mean, the Barrick, his name's Barrick Hardley. He's been
fabulous. Absolutely loved him.
Yeah, I mean, and he was, you know, that was a great, coughing. But basically, he came into the room, and it was really kind of bizarre where some people, if anyone's ever been in a casting session, it's very bizarre to see your words come to life, especially if they're so far from what you had in your head.
Oh, yeah.
Some people would come into the room, and they did not see his role as being funny or humorous in any way.
Oh,
and so he came in and just hit it exactly where I saw it, and he just brought that energy and humor to it all that I just thought was, you know, absolutely fantastic.
I thought he did a great job.
The lead was a little dry
for me for what he was. I mean, I think maybe that's your writing. You wanted him to play it a little more down than the other guy.
Is that what you were
after?
Yeah, well, it's kind of, you know, I wanted him to kind of be, well, not to kind of, but to be oblivious to this entire situation. So, you know, so while he's seen, you know, like, oh my God, you guys are up here and I'm trying to, you know, sorry for the spoilers, I'm, you know, trying to, you know, cheat on my girlfriend and this is the biggest issue that we're all dealing with. I just thought it was kind of, you know, a good way to, you know, the audience knows and the characters know, but he doesn't know.
Right,
and,
I agree with Barrett you.
Was able to play that well. He said, I mean, and I don't know if this is true, but he kept on joking that he's like, I didn't read the entire screenplay. And I think his strategy there was to prevent having more information than his character would know. So he only kind of read what he was involved with specifically.
Okay, that makes sense. I can see that. And the guy with the beard, I should have better notes. The guy with the beard, I recognized him from a couple of things. They're buddy that has the cabin.
Oh, yeah, yeah, right, right, right. So Marshall Teague was in, you're talking about the military chaplain guy?
Him I recognize for sure, and the other guy. Not the guy before him when they borrow his cabin and he doesn't know about it.
Oh, that's Barrack Hardly. That's Barrack Hardly. That's Chris. So basically everything I just said, that's about him. If you're talking about the dark hair guy, that's Jack.
I'll have better notes next time I do this. Which character is which?
Yeah, I mean, in which case, I'll just speak to, you know, Micah's abilities as well. You know, I mean, like, he also just has a charisma that I've yet to really to encounter all that often out here, you know what I mean? And I'm not just talking about actors, but just, you know, that kind of, that to be so talented and also to have such charm and such great work ethic, I think that he just, every single day, he was willing to go. I mean, we were shooting from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. We were doing night shoots.
I was wondering, because a lot of it looks dark, so I was wondering if that was a location issue.
Yeah, and it's like, let me tell you, when you realize, like, when you're going into a shoot and you're under the, you know, you know that you're going to be struggling with the lack of sleep when you're dealing with a 12-hour night shoots every day, or for at least, I think, 75% of it was basically 12-hour night shoots.
That's what it looked like to me, there are a lot of night shots, because the way you were lighting it kind of gave that away.
Yeah, and I mean, that was just a plan we had always in the beginning, and I mean, that's another example where, you know, speaking to what I was saying earlier, where, you know, it's to want to plan a shoot that's taking place all during the night, inevitably the script has to change to accommodate the schedule.
I was thinking that while watching it.
Exactly, and so it took place over 25 days. It was 10 days in Los Angeles and 9 days up in Donner Lake near Lake Tahoe.
That was my question. Good. That was the second one. I go, that didn't look like L.A. So I'm like, where are they going?
Right. Yeah, it was a little bit different. And then that cabin was owned by our producer, Nick Matthews. Just going off of, you know, Micah and Lawrence, I mean, they just – my biggest concern was, like, I knew I could handle that type of schedule, or at least I should say I was hoping I could handle that type of schedule. But they really, every single day, you would never, ever expect that we were shooting that type of arduous schedule. They just were always bringing 110% to every single day and always wanting to go for more and more and more. Yeah. And it was inspiring to be, you know. It's like we're all good friends now, and
that's
then
great.
Hopefully we're going to collaborate on the next one, yeah.
Well, because that guy... The other guy's in The Flash now, I noticed. I'm like, I knew that guy. I recognized him from The Flash. I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and that happened shortly after our film, and it was just, you know, and they're doing, he's doing, like, I think, indie film after indie film, and
right.
It's really cool.
Well, that's
where
you get noticed by guys like me that review probably, we probably review about 300 films a year.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Because I have a Twitter account, and I tweet every day. So I watch film every day. So I do see a ton of actors. So I was like, oh, I recognize him. I recognize him. And I like discovering them now, like in a film like yours, and then seeing them 5 years from now going, hey, because I go to the Toronto Film Fest and I see them sometimes. Because, hey, I saw you in Road to the World. Really? And they're so happy when you tell them that.
Yeah. I mean, it's you know, like, it's so cool to see how many of them are going on to amazing things. I mean, Barrack is in Comedy Central stuff. Tim Martin Gleason, I think, is doing an Amazon series. He's the guy who plays Frank's boss.
Yes.
Katie Hackett, who plays she always has, like, a brief little shot in the end when she's the boss that's kind of closing out the film. She's directing some critically acclaimed play over in Pasadena. And so seeing, you know, the team that you assembled go on to bigger and better things, I think it's just always a thrill to watch.
Does that open doors for you at all?
You know, I mean, I don't expect it, but I mean, obviously you're always hoping. I think that there is kind of you know, the rising tide will raise all ships type of situation.
Exactly.
And so, yeah, you know, I mean, like I said, I keep in contact with most of these people. Paul T. Murray, for instance, he just directed a feature film, I think called Paint It Red. I imagine Lawrence Fuller's listening to this. I'm sorry if I got the title wrong, but Lawrence is actually the leading role in it. So it's cool to even see that individuals from the shoot are collaborating with one another just because they love the work that everyone brought to the table for Road to the Well.
Question with the music. Who did it? I really liked it. I thought the music was very well done.
That was Connor Jones. I was introduced through a friend that I worked with at Maker, as a lot of our crew worked there as well, given that we all were full-time employees there. And Connor Jones, I mean, I love this guy. He's phenomenally talented. We met up, and my, you know, we're an ultra-low-budget production. And so I was like, I got a kind of a big demand. I need a very big cinematic score, and I, you know, can only provide, you know, probably a crumb of what that's worth.
And he did a great job. He gave it to you. I will fully, the score was one of the things I have it in my notes. The score was good.
Yeah, yeah. And he was, you know, and he was very enthusiastic. I mean, I think that the cool thing that with everyone involved is that, you know, being the one that was kind of in charge of it from start to finish, it was making sure that whoever did get involved was going to be as committed and as interested and passionate about the material as possible. And I think Connor just did exactly that. I mean, his and I, our relationship was really just, you know, I warned him beforehand. I'm like, I really get into the weeds with everything. You know, it's like I you know, as much as I, you know, as I was just describing with the cinematographer and our army soldiers or just discussing the roles with the cast or you know, just having frequent meetings with the casting directors or the sound team or whatever. And he was really enthusiastic about that. So it was him and I had, like, you know, this very just, I think it took place over, you know, 2 or 3 months where it's just, you know, late night phone calls until yeah. 1 in the morning, going over every single, you know, beat in the film in order to have a compliment, because I knew what I wanted. It was kind of influenced by Magnolia, which uses a score to kind of supplement the dialogue sequences, and so I wanted something that was going to be both like kind of omnipresent and then kind of an omniscient observer of the situation, kind of looking down upon it and complimenting you know, both everything from the dialogue to the action, and so him and I would just be exchanging different scores that we enjoyed or different music that we enjoyed or just meeting up and just, you know, getting into the weeds, and it was just, yeah, he just knocked it out of the park.
I think he did too. Like, that's one of my, that's why I have a note here. I did make notes when I watched it just to ask these questions. I'm like, that was really good. How many pages was the script, and how many did you shoot a day?
The I think it was 95, 98 or something like that.
I would have said about 110, which is funny. So,
I mean, you know, the minute per page kind of formula that people often use. I actually got scared because right before we started shooting, our script supervisor, Anna Bowen, she clocked it in, and she's like, oh, you know, your screenplay is clocking in at about 75 minutes, and that means that your film could only be 75 minutes. So you're like right at that precipice, yeah. In a feature or not. And so I got really nervous, and I'm like, I mean, I can't really change it. I can't add anything to the screenplay specifically. And so what she, luckily, unfortunately, I think she just must have read it too fast, because the initial cut of the movie was about like 2.5 hours long.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I mean, maybe a little bit shorter, but I mean, obviously there's a lot of fat that we need to trim, but I think that, you know, I'll never forget, is like right before we left for Christmas break and, you know, had about 4 weeks off as we went back to Chicago with my editor and I, Angela Latimer, you know, we were at like 1 hour and 55 minutes, maybe 2 hours flat or something, and I was just, oh man, I don't know what else we can possibly cut. And then you come back and you watch it with a fresh pair of eyes, and boom, you just are able to cut out another 15 minutes or so. And I, you know, even after reading all the reviews and everything, I think there's one ubiquitous criticism, which is that, you know, it probably could benefit from another 5 or 10 minutes of being cut. You know, and I can't help but this, I can totally see the point, and so you're working on the next one, and you're trying to just, I think the issue is that you have so much information that you feel is necessary that it's, you know, it's hard to find those strategic cuts, but yeah, so I mean, going back to your question, I'm going off on tangents here, but
perfect.
Yeah,
basically, I love it.
Yeah, 95 to 98 pages, and so we shot about, I guess, you know, it really varied from day to day, because, I mean, if you're shooting, you know, one scene would, or one page could have, you know, 7 different establishing shots of where they're driving to or whatever montage sequence we were ushering in, and another scene would just be, page after page of dialogue. Yeah. So, you know, for instance, I think we varied from 2 pages a day all the way up to, I think the peak was during the cabin scene with Marshall Teague and them, yeah. Where we were shooting, I think, about 7 pages a day. And so that one was where we were most nervous, because that was the big moment that you didn't want to rush, and unfortunately, but at the same time, there's this, you know, crazy vibe on set where I think, you know, a mixture of Marshall Teague being there and all his knowledge about filmmaking and all the films that he's been in, just had everyone bringing their A game to that particular day, and it was like, I'll never forget, it was just like this machine where everyone was just moving, it was like watching it dance, and
I think that was fabulous.
You know, like, that was the big moment. And so everyone was very, very, you know, committed to making sure that we got what we needed. So, but I would not recommend doing 7 pages a day to anyone that's listening. I would say that the best, You know, it's like, I think that what you learn at the end is that if you do two to maybe three pages a day, like anything beyond that, stretching it pretty far. So, it's, you know, as much as you're like, well, what's 5 pages in a day? It's like, if you're doing it well, that's quite a bit.
Oh,
you know,
I agree. Because, yeah. I mean, I got a one weird pick. Maybe I'm reaching for something. Maybe it's not there. The shovel seat.
Right.
Both guys mentioned the shovels.
Right.
And they go to bury the body, they come back, and Marshall Teague enters the shovels, and their buddy comes to the cavern, he mentions the shovels.
Right.
Is that a personal experience, or I'm just reading into it? Because I thought maybe that was something that happened to somebody you knew.
We only buried one body as research for the film. There wasn't really any experience there. I mean, you're basically just talking about, you know, them returning with the shovels.
Well, it's just funny because both guys made the same comment about stealing. So I'm like, is this a personal experience or something? That's really different.
I mean, if anything, I think it was just the idea of between Nick's cabin where we shot at, our producer Nick right. Matthews, and just a cabin that my grandparents had up in Indiana. The idea of borrowing stuff and the taking your time returning it, I think, was just something I was calling back to.
Well, that's, I wasn't sure.
Sorry. What's that?
No, you're totally good, because I have a cottage, and we have mutual friends, and we just borrow stuff.
Yeah, so right, exactly.
The comment, I was like, okay, is he reaching for something I'm missing here? Because I just borrow stuff, and you return it, you never worry about it.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Just inspired by,
electricity thing, was that just a script?
And that's another thing where, if I were to do that again, I probably would have done differently. But yeah, I mean, that was, it's funny because I can't remember, there was something, and I'd have to go back to the screenplay. It's just been 2 or 3 years since I read, the first draft before we started making the shooting draft. Which is basically that, in lieu of what we just talked about, godparents or my grandparents would always shut down their cabin, and it's just, no one's going up there for the winter they shut it down, in the fall for the whole winter season and everything. And that was basically kind of where it was being pulled from, is that what if they did just shut down the cabin lights or, shut it down in a way that I was hoping would just kind of, it was kind of serving the plot where it's like, I think it'll be more interesting if this place is dark and creepy rather than being able to turn on a bunch of lights and everything.
I was wondering if you were going for the dark and creepy.
The logic was pulled from a real situation and kind of maybe gratuitously placed within the story. But I thought, you gotta have a dark cabin if you're dealing with a murder mystery.
Well, that's what I was wondering if you were going for. These are just things I'm pulling. I'm like, I'm going to ask because I don't usually get to ask people these questions when I watch this film.
I mean, it was definitely, excuse me.
No problem. I don't really have a lot more questions for you. Do you have anything I didn't ask? I do have a few minor questions.
No. I mean, I thought this was great. I appreciate your flexibility today.
It happens. Yeah. I do have a couple. Did it play the circuit? Did it play the festival circuit?
It world premiered at Dances with Films at the TCL Theater in Hollywood, which is really cool. It was just bizarre because, I think that week as we were playing there, they had to, shut down that theater to have the World of Warcraft premiere.
Yeah.
And so it's like, wow, World of Warcraft is playing the state. What's up?
Your film came out last year then?
It's hard to explain where it's your festival isn't really your release. It's more of just your kind of exhibition. That makes sense. Our official release was in January of this year.
Basically, you got in contact with me pretty close then.
Yeah. So basically what we did was we played there. That attracted our distributor, Candy Factory Films.
Okay, good.
And then we were really fortunate because they just were really supportive of the film. They're really excited about it. And basically what they wanted to do was, a lot of the distributors we were talking to, I mean, this is July at this point. They're like, you probably won't be released until next summer. And you're like, oh, my God. Don't want to wait that long.
Because
it took us about 8 months to get into a festival. And that's a very common experience,
Absolutely.
It's just, there's more films being made than ever before, more indie films being made than ever before. And, everyone that I meet at these festivals, they all went through kind of a similar experience. So they get into one and then they just have this long dry spell and it's just, really unfortunate. And so basically we got into that and that kind of gave us whatever momentum, and also just one after another, and we got into, you know, Twin Cities, and went to San Diego Film Festival, and Lone Star Film Festival, and we won Best of Fest at Long Beach Indie, and we won Best Supporting Actor for Micah Parker at Orlando Film Festival, and that was all kind of leading up to the release, and we did, and so now we have, like, I don't know, it's really overwhelming. You know, we have about, I think, you know, maybe 30 or so, a little bit more positive reviews out of like 34, 35 total. And so as much as I'm thinking, like, are these people all lying or something, you know, it's just so relieving to just have the film out there and to be able to just see that people are enjoying it. You know, it's exciting to see. And, you know, yeah, it's been a pleasure.
How did you decide on Candy Factory to distribute your film? I really don't know. I've never made a film, so I really want to know the process of how you pick.
No, it's tough out there for indie filmmakers. I mean, just to be, like, completely honest, you know, unless you're playing at, you know, Sundance or Toronto, a top five, you know, and yeah. Even if you're playing there, it's hard to get, like, a really, like, a lot of people are like, oh, you must have, did they buy your film, or they did give you money, and it's like, no, that's not how these deals work anymore.
This is what I want to hear, yeah.
You know, it's like, that's just, I mean, yeah, I mean, if you go to Sundance, you win, you know, the grand jury prize, but yeah, you know, it's a little difficult to get to that point, but basically, you know, we have like, you know, three or four or five competing offers, and they just, you know, I've learned throughout this whole process to kind of know who's being serious and who's kind of full of it, you know what I mean? I had to be a salesman throughout this whole process,
of course,
you know, and recruiting everybody to be a part of it, so I'm very aware of what people are selling me when we're talking to distributors, and that's not to, you know, diminish or criticize what others were bringing to the table, but just that Candy Factory were just so encouraging and so supportive of the project, you know, and I think the one of the easiest, you know, kind of, or best signs was that they were just really interested in the film, you know, I mean, they sat me down, they're like, hey, it was kind of like an interview that wasn't going anywhere, they're just like, hey, man, we have all these questions about this film, and it's just out, you know, being interested in the film more than anything else. And so that was, you know, a big part of it, and they've been great.
That's awesome. I live in Toronto, just by the way, so I do go to TIFF a lot.
Oh, nice.
So
nice.
I'm well. I do try. Do I have a new film coming out or anything coming up or anything? Or
I mean, I just finished the screenplay for the next movie that I hope to make. I was racing to get done. I've been working on it since last February of 2016. And it was basically like, you know, after you spend 5 years on a film, I think the first thing you realize is I better be into this next one that, you know, knowing it could take this long. And so hopefully it doesn't take that long. But you know, you're also taking everything you learned and everything you did wrong or all the mistakes that you made, and you're trying to, just improve upon them. And even, you know, reading the reviews and reading the critics, you're trying to take, you know, more common criticisms and trying to adjust yourself in the right places in order to just try and, you know, focus on your strengths or what you can improve. And so the next film, I can't really talk about the details too much. It's basically a political thriller chamber drama.
Awesome.
That hopefully will take place in Indiana or something that will look like a small town in Indiana. And it's definitely got me excited. You know, I gave the script to both Lawrence and Micah as an initial passover and or initial read, I should say, and they're digging it. And so hopefully we can get the band back together and we'll see what we can do the next time.
I do have one final question I ask everybody that knows me. I need to know your favorite film of all times.
Favorite film? Do you mind if I give two?
You can give two, but I ask everybody because I try to find films I haven't seen. Is why I ask this question.
Unfortunately, mine aren't that interesting.
I will ask you the next question.
But basically, it would be Jaws and Sideways currently.
Two great films.
Jaws is just like a movie that I think I'm just doing an interview with somebody else. And it just reminds me of being a little kid. I remember playing outside in the Chicago summers that are like incredibly humid. I'm sure you know what it's like.
I do.
And just like being called in and just having that wash of air conditioning being on. And your mom's like, all right, you got to stay in now. And you're like, I want to get back home. Friends, but then Jaws would come on and it would just be, you know, you're like immediately just lasered in and I would just be taken away and to this day I find it one of the most fascinating and amazing films that I still get a joy to watch. I love watching with people that have never seen it before and to see that it's still timeless, that people watching, wow, that incredible film, you know. And then in terms of Sideways, I don't know. It's hard to explain as to why that movie. I remember when it initially came out, it had a lot of hype and everything. And I didn't really enjoy it. I mean, I didn't really, like, I mean, I liked it, but I didn't find it as incredible as everybody else was, you know, declaring. And then I watched it again, and I'm like, oh, this is actually pretty good. And then I watched it again, and I was like, oh, this is very good. And so, I don't know, I guess maybe with Miles' character, kind of, you know, the fear of kind of being a middle-aged, you know, failure of a writer or something like that kind of speaks to me or whatever it shall be. I'm not really sure. But that movie, I just feel every time I watch it, I discover new little things and kernels and little Easter eggs throughout it. And I just find it, you know, such a fascinating film. So so Sideways and Jaws, those are probably the two.
Maybe similar lines. Favorite fun film was my last question.
Favorite fun film? Ooh.
Like a film you'll just sit down and watch. Like, for me, it's Major League. I can be honest, I will watch it over. I could be on right now. I'd just pick it up and watch it.
What's yours? Which one?
Major League.
Major League? Oh, that's awesome. I just got into baseball this, or last year, I should say. So I've been watching Ken Burns' baseball documentary, which is pretty awesome. I gotta, like, try and think fast about this. Major League or...
Can't think of it. It's all good if you can't think of anything. I know it's a fun question.
I might go, like, a Back to the Future. Or I just rewatched, like, Indiana Jones.
There you go. See, Indiana Jones would work for me.
Indiana Jones and The Last Crusade. Like, I'm on a crusade to talk about this film. The intro to that movie is one of the most amazing... Because I haven't watched it probably... Excuse me. And I've been watching it in about 10 years. And it is just, like... It blew my mind. Because I went through all of them again. I went through, you know, Temple of Doom and Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, which is goddamn terrible. and then Raiders of the Lost Ark. But the intro to The Last Crusade, between the mixture of, like, all the Easter eggs and history you're getting about Indiana Jones and just the brilliant sequence, moving from, you know, the digging up the crucifix all the way up through that train that's, you know, is for the circus is just so exciting to watch. So that might be my new favorite. Like, just put it on and I will include it.
That's it. Okay, well, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
And if you do another film, I'd love to do another interview and watch it.
I will hit you up immediately, Simon, I promise, man.
And if you ever come to Toronto, I promise to come visit your film.
I will. That was one of the first rejections we got was from Toronto, so hopefully next time we'll get up there.
Well, I do know the organizer casually. I know who he is.
Well, dude, I mean, I'll probably be hitting you up pretty soon then, hopefully with the next one that's getting started up. And, you know, I mean, that'd be my dream. My dream is to, like, do a premiere or at least play at the Toronto Film Festival. I just think it's such an amazing event.
It's insane. That's the only thing I can tell you. It's insane. I've never been to a smaller festival, so I don't know what they're like. But Toronto is just, I don't know how to describe it. It's just like being in a baseball stadium, but half the size and everybody's going the same way. And it's just insane confusion. You can't watch that many films. You're eating, you're doing this, you're doing that. It'll boggle your mind watching 5 films a day.
Oh, man. I'll make it up there one of these days.
Oh, great. I can't wait to meet you. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Simon. It's been a pleasure.
Bye bye.
I used to hate the water. I can't imagine why.